All right, I'll have a little confession to make. When I got the theme for this month's sermons, love, I was a bit stumped. Love is such a broad topic. There's so many different angles you could take. I couldn't decide. And the more and more I thought about it, the more I got myself confused. You know how it is sometimes when you think about something too much and you start to question what your very perceptions, what you know? I began to wonder if I really even understood what love is. And Jan was in Chicago, so she wasn't there to remind me. So as I sometimes do when I'm stumped by a question, I decided to consult the great thinker philosophers of our generation. Surely they would tell me what love is. Two of the most renowned thinkers of our time, Sir Paul McCartney and John Lennon, tell us love is all you need. Beautiful, but I'm not really sure I understand. John Paul Young theorizes that love is in the air. That's interesting, but not terribly useful. Jennifer Lopez and Lin-Manuel Miranda, more recently updating the work of other philosophers, tell us that love makes the world go round. It seems that love is a very positive thing. Unless, of course, you want the world to stop going round so you can get off. But as I researched further, I found other eminent thinkers who vehemently disagreed. John Giles, better known by his pen name Jay, put it most succinctly, "Love stinks," he says, with considerable passion. The highly respected Pat Benatar seems to support this notion, at least in part when she proclaims that love is a battlefield. And no other than Ms. Tina Turner questions the entire premise of it all when she asks, what's love got to do with it? I soon realized that the great minds of my time seemed hopelessly conflicted and confused by love. Despite the fact that about 80% of popular songs of the last 30 years are about love, or at least something like it, there was no clear consensus on what it is or why it is important. In despair, I put the great thinkers out of my mind by turning off the radio and determined I would have to go back to the source. Then I remembered where I had seen such a definition before. In fact, I remember reading the very passage I needed years ago at my sister's wedding. It made her cry, something I'm rather proud of in that way that only a little brother can understand. In fact, I'd be willing to bet everyone here has heard this passage many times at weddings, despite the fact every pastor I know keeps telling us that it's not really about romantic love. It's not reserved for spouses and lovers. The love described in it is available to all of us. I'm referring, of course, to the famous passage in 1 Corinthians, where the Apostle Paul eloquently tells us exactly what Christian love is. So let's look more closely at what it says. Perhaps Paul can explain it better than the icons of popular music. It starts somewhat confusingly. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. That's beautiful imagery, but also somewhat mysterious. Maybe it's just a setup line. It goes on in much the same vein. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. Okay, I get it. Love is obviously important. But what is it, and how do we do it? So let's move on. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. All right, Paul seems to be beating a dead horse here. He's already made his point about the importance of love. Does he have to drive it home so hard? I guess he thought so. And that implication that why we do something, maybe even more important than what we do, really makes me think. Maybe we're getting somewhere. Let's look a little further. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. Finally, he's getting down to telling us what it is and how to go about it. Patience, kindness, modesty, contentment. This is certainly a different way of looking at love than the great minds would have us believe. These words give us more of an image of serenity and peace than rousing passion. Paul goes on, it does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Now we're talking. This is some good stuff here. He seems to be saying that Christian love also has a lot to do with forgiveness and selflessness. Let's look at some more. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Wow, that one makes you think. Truth is not exactly what would immediately jump to mind when you think of love. But clearly, Christian love also requires us to embrace the truth. I wonder if anyone ever told certain politicians about that. Then he says, it always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. I think this is when my sister started to cry. This love thing sure has a lot of requirements, but it sounds wonderful. Who doesn't want to protect and be protected? To trust and be trusted, to have hope, and to persevere. I'm eager to see some more. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. Oh, we were doing so well. This is kind of confusing. Give me some more of that patient and kind stuff that's easy to understand, if not always so easy to do. Paul started off okay, but with the love never fails line, that's a wonderful optimistic sense of resentment. But the rest of it, prophecy and tongues and knowledge, is a bit deep, at least for me. I wish he'd just come to the point. And why is he so down on all these spiritual gifts? Well, maybe he'll get to it. Let's have some patience. Let's look. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. My sister was definitely crying by this point. This is some really, really deep stuff. Beautiful language, no doubt, but I'm still not sure I get it. Let's get to the bottom of this and finish it. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Oh. That hits the spot. That last line, the greatest of these is love. It makes all the rest comprehensible. It is not that the other spiritual gifts are unimportant, but love is the underpinning of them all. And that love is not a thing of roaring passion, here, now, and gone tomorrow. It is a thing of steady and consistent power, patient, kind, modest, selfless, forgiving. To put it simply, love is putting the needs of others equal to or ahead of our own. So simple, so difficult. A challenge for all of us to last our whole lives. The one thing God has charged us to do that is more important than any other: to love Him and to love each other. Perhaps Messrs. McCartney and Lennon weren't so wrong after all. They seem to have gotten pretty close to God's message to us when they said, "Love is all you need."